Funding for the connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. The dot-bomb fallout is still bringing e-businesses to their knees. At the same time, poking up through the rubble is a new class of self-organized websites. They're defined not as investment strategies, but by a certain logic of web technology and a community ethic that could be called editorial democracy online. With a small staff and some clever computer code, a site like slashdot.org or plastic.com can attract dedicated users who in turn create 99% of the site's content. It's an organic process, constantly changing the site itself as users post new links and rate each other's contributions. There may be lessons here for the rest of the troubled content sites on the internet. We're talking about editorial democracy online this hour. Connection listeners, do you post your stories or opinions or restaurant reviews on the web? Would you rather read the best texts of your fellow netizens or those of the New York Times online editorial department? 1-800-423-TALK makes the self-organized web connection. 1-800-423-8255. Or you can join us online at theconnection.org, where you can post your own comments on our own self-organized online forum. Our guests this hour are Stephen Johnson, co-editor-in-chief of Feed. He's the author of Interface Culture and of Emergence, a book that's just emerging. Also, John Katz, our old friend and Slashdot columnist, the author of the book Geeks, among others. Steve Johnson, I wish you'd start. I'd start with you. I've been browsing sites like epinions.com or thevines.com or your own plastic.com, and I'm impressed. But you got to explain what's going on here.
Well, what we're doing with Plastic and what's been happening for a while on some sites, including John's wonderful site, Slashdot, that he's been a part of for a while, is basically what we think of as the kind of second major phase in the interactive revolution, which is the kind of first generation of interactivity was all about individuals being empowered to post their own web page and post, you know, comments to a bulletin board. But what started to happen with these new sites is you're starting to see collaborative or collective interactivity where thousands and thousands of users work together on various different projects, including posting, you know, as you said, on ePinions, reviews of products or restaurants, and then other users come along and rate those reviews and rate the reviewers themselves. Amazon does a wonderful job with this.
Well, take ePinions, for example. I mean, it's sort of shades of the old Consumer Reports, the idea that of consumers rating steam irons, except in this case, you can rate steam irons. You can also rate movies, restaurants, books, lawnmowers, motorbikes, pretty much anything you want. Explain, Steve, I mean, it's rudimentary, I suppose, but just how the technology of the web allows you to a certain kind of rating system of the comments themselves that put certain contributors at the top.
It's very interesting. It's actually relatively simple technology, but all of these systems share this one quality, which is they involve some kind of meta information or feedback information that gets presented most of the time by other users. So the web has always allowed you to post your own thoughts on something. I mean, that's what it was always about at the beginning. You know, you put up your homepage where you talk about your home stereo and you rant about it for a long time. The difference now is that other users can come along and say, hey, this was helpful to me, or this was less helpful to me. Or in some cases, they can say, hey, this review is related to this other review. And so either quality filters start to appear where you can see the most highly rated things, or you have kind of relevancy or connection filters that let you see things that are related to each other.
This is the Amazon trick. Sort of, if you like this book, you'd probably like that book. Or people who bought this also bought that. But furthermore, sort of reader reviews that allow you also to read the review and then say how useful was this review. Is
exactly
that basically the idea?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, what all these systems share, which is fundamentally different from the first generation of the web, I think, is that they are systems that get more organized and get more useful the more people and the more information flows through them. The first generation of the web, as more and more pages were uploaded and more sites were created, the web grew more disorganized. It got harder and harder to find what you were looking for because there was so much stuff out there and you couldn't separate the high-quality information from the stuff that was less useful. These new systems, based on this little extra element of kind of user feedback, enable the web to get more organized and more useful the bigger it gets.
John Katz, part of the philosophical question here, it's also a practical question, is sort of do we really believe in cultural democracy? Is that what we're heading toward, a kind of collective intelligence?
I guess I would put it a different way. You know, I think what Stephen has done is created an incredibly significant site with Plastic. You know, it's very exciting when I went on it, and I think it has enormous applications for media, new and old. I mean, I think it's very organized media. I think it's the beginning of a new era on the web of coherent media. You know, the big problem on the web has been there's a lot of great stuff, a lot of information, but it's, of course, chaos. You know, people flaming and screaming and spamming, and everyone's fear about it has been how do you rate or gauge information. At the same time, the main problem that mainstream media has had has been this sort of narrow, suffocating, elitist kind of agenda. You know, the Monica Lewinsky syndrome, where all these journalists think one thing is important, but their consumers think another thing is important. So what Steve is doing on Plastic, and I think the significance of what he's doing is it's really bottoms-up media. It's really it's very organized. It's very coherent. I mean, there's certainly an editorial sensibility around it, but you don't have to wonder what the agenda is. The everybody has a say in it, in shaping it. You're not turning it over to them, but you don't have to wonder if something is important. You can allow leaders to emerge on a site, people who are intelligent, people who have something to say, people who are valuable. You can begin to spot stories that are of interest to people, new issues and trends. It's really a journalist's dream, in a way, to really not be sitting there in offices scratching your head and saying, gee, what's important today, which is what they would do at the New York Times, but to sort of let's enter into a more democratic and collaborative way of just being more certain about it. So I don't think it's even, and it is democratic, but I think it's also in a consumerist sense, it's very exciting because you can begin to cull from all these mobs out there. You can separate the kids who want to flame are still free to do that, but you can begin to pick thoughtful people, leaders within your own community of information.
Look, can I just presume and flatter ourselves to say, I mean, I think that's what we love about talk radio too. I mean, you can talk about all sorts of subjects, but be guided by callers and listeners as to where they want the conversation to go, what's the point that's being missed, and it's very, very different from top-down sort of straight broadcasting or straight print either. But then the question comes, I mean, maybe Steve or John, you'd give an example. You mentioned the Monica Lewinsky problem where sort of mass media, supermarket media decide this is what we're all going to talk about for the next 6 months.
And not just supermarket media, but the New York Times.
Right. An instance, please, where sort of bubble up, bottoms up, vox pop directs you to kind of some subject that we didn't even know we were all interested in.
Well, Stephen, I'm sure, has his own thoughts, but I know on Slashdot, which has used versions of the sort of moderating filtering system for about a year now, one of the things we were discovering in these posts that were emerging was, in this tech world is considered to be apolitical and apathetic. We were finding in these posts this passion, interest in civil liberties, which we had no idea was an interest of the site. They were really concerned about free speech. They were concerned about rights online. They were concerned about government intervention and privacy. And we were able to sort of, well, not so much we, the people running the site, were able to really tailor, comments, coverage, and topics related to that issue. So here's an enormous interest that's in a community that we had no idea they were interested in. And now we know.
Steve
and
Johnson,
not only that, we're able to generate tremendous discussion about it.
Steve Johnson, give us your own kind of favorite example of something that happens when the conversation is genuinely open.
Well, I thought it might be useful actually just to explain briefly what both Plastic and Slashdot do so that it's clear in the sense there are two elements, and then maybe I can answer the question. The first thing is that it's a both sites, and in fact, Plastic is based on the software that Slashdot that the creators of Slashdot wrote. It's open source software, so we were able to adapt it, which has been great for us. What happens is the entire community can send in things that they found on the web to editors. So the entire community of users basically is kind of scouting for interesting stories, which is a great way to do that. Rather than hire a staff of 50 people to look and see what's online, you have your whole audience doing it. They send links into the kind of front door of Plastic, which is edited by Joey Nuff. He's kind of the ringleader. So there's a little bit of hierarchy involved. It's useful to sometimes have a little bit of a filter, and Slashdot has a similar situation. Once those stories go up, then people are free to discuss them, and there's a lot of kind of traffic from either Slashdot or Plastic to the stories, and then people come back to discuss them at the respective Plastic or Slashdot sites. All those posts, and this is where there's a really interesting thing that Slashdot did that John alluded to. On Slashdot, you'll often see a story go up, and there'll be 500 comments within, you know, 3 hours. Mm. So it's way too much to actually filter through on your own. But because every post has been rated by users, you'll see them actually evaluated on a scale from -1 to 5. And you can set a threshold as you surf through Slashdot that enables you to only see things that are rated, say, above 3 or above 4. So you can come in and take those 500 posts and narrow them down to the 20 best posts in the discussion. And when you read Slashdot at that level, it is as interesting and stimulating and as well put together as any professionally edited newsroom.
What is the collective judgment, say on a book? You're not going to just get the New York Times Sunday Book Review verdict or is it on the cover kind of question. You're going to look at say you just look at the fives, the reviews that hundreds, maybe thousands of people find most interesting. Are we going to come to believe in sort of universal, the wisdom of popular taste, John Katz? What are we going to learn about it?
Well, I think, you know, with technology, there's a flip side to everything, you know, and I think on sites like Plastic and Slashdot, it's very exciting because there's a lot of innovation, and, you know, Stephen is one of the really great writing minds on the net, and it's very exciting to see this come about because I think this coherence has just been what's missing. If you're saying, okay, well, what are the dangers? And there's dangers in everything. Of course, there's a danger of kind of this continued balkanization where people can eventually adjust. I don't mean Plastic or Slashdot necessarily, but people could eventually adjust sites and software to really only hear the messages they want to hear and only hear the kinds of, you know, you could rate for political views or somebody who agrees with you or disagrees with you. That's not something Plastic would do, but I could see that's something some sites would do. So there can be a balkanization.
Is there room for unpopular views?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly on these sites, people are not rated for, you know, whether they're critical. I mean, people who say, you know, cats, please die, which there are many, would get a low rating. But people who said you're wrong could get a very high rating if they expressed the thought coherently and intelligently. I think the other potential dark side down the road is, you know, as corporations and continue to amass information about people, eventually you could extend this software into being able to figure out what people's particular views are about a given subject.
You know? And when you run for dog catcher, somebody says, but wait a sec, he rated, you know, a lousy restaurant. He gave it 4 stars 7 years ago on Slashdot.com or whatever. We're talking about the new possibilities in self-organized web pages. The phone's 1-800-423-8255. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're talking about self-organized websites, which means to say that they use their users as the troops. It's a version of radical marketing, making your customers, in a sense, do the work, but also be the judges of the product to rate other people's work in a way that brings the best stuff to the top. It begins to sound like a kind of much closer to a sort of virtual town meeting online on every kind of opinion, whether it's politics or appliances or travel or restaurants or books or anything else. 1-800-423-8255 joins the conversation with John Katz and Stephen Johnson. Brian is calling from Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I've been involved in the opinions.com community for about 6 or 8 months.
Just out of curiosity, Brian, what do you review?
I review films, music, and books, mostly.
Okay.
And one thing that it's, and I'm not a professional writer, but...
Do people like your reviews?
It appears that they're pretty popular, yeah, with the community. And one thing, besides meeting a lot of people with similar interests for exchanges of ideas, it's really demystified professional criticism for me. When I read a review, for instance, of a product or service now in a magazine or newspaper, I don't have the same respect that I once had because my feeling is, well, this guy or this writer is just another hack.
That I like, can do. Yeah,
like
right.
Me, you know? So it's been good in that way for me because I take them less seriously. The only advantage, I suppose, to the professional media would be that everything is spelled correctly and edited properly and thoughts are usually well organized, and that may not be the case online sometimes, but I like the idea of the democratic exchange of ideas more than anything else.
Do you review other people's ideas on the web?
On opinions.com, you rate the review, the opinion for content, and some people rate it whether they agree with it, and some people will rate it on how well it's written and organized.
What's your standard?
How well written and organized it is.
What about just plain helpfulness?
Yes. I mean, I've read reviews that weren't well spelled or well organized, but were so heartfelt that I couldn't help but rate it highly.
That's interesting. Brian, thank you. 1-800-423-8255.
You know, Christopher, we're starting to
Steve, please.
We're starting to build spell checkers into the actual forms that people use.
Oh, come on, let them misspell as they like.
It's the one edge that will disappear in the future. But, you know, it reminds me of Michael Kinsley had a line that kind of irritated people when he launched Slate. I can't remember where he wrote this. John, you may remember this or said it somewhere, but he said, effectively talking about online participation with users and traditional editorial, authorial relationships, and he said that it was like going to a restaurant and having the guy at the next table cook your meal for you rather than the chef. That was what, you know, kind of user forums
yes.
like.
The other thing was going to civilize the net.
Yeah, and my feeling about it is that it's actually more like what the web is really like in a traditional, you know, kind of authorial editorial relationship is like going to a restaurant and having the chef come sit at your table and, you know, deliver an hour-long prepared speech. It's just not the kind of context you want to be talking to your neighbors, you want to be having that more kind of folksy relationship.
Steve, I would still say, 86, the spell check. We on talk radio, people can speak in their own accents, they can stutter, they can stammer, they can pause as they like, and we're not going to homogenize it.
I'd like to buy some Lucidity software.
Yeah, that's for me, though, not for the machine. 1-800-423-8255 makes a self-organized .com world. John is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome,
hello,
John.
Hello, Stephen and John. Listen, I'm not sure who it was that made the comment that around this radical marketing and cultural democracy that businesses might be able to eventually use this kind of technology to sense what people think about new products. Was that Steve or John?
I think that was Chris.
Well, I just mentioned radical marketing. I mean, radical marketing, the idea of sort of annual conventions of Harley-Davidson users, which is basically putting the customers into your sales force. This is a variation on that. It's sort of getting your customers to be your players and your critics all at the same time.
Yeah, because I could see that a site like plastic.com, especially... Do you know if the site takes its advertising from marketers who are getting market feedback already from your users? I know you're a columnist and I think don't run the site itself if I have that right, but I think that's an interesting question and it begins to answer this posit about whether cultural democracy is possible. There's a whole commercial direction that cultural democracy could take or radical marketing is already taking. I mean, we're just throwing out these terms. They're not like cast in stone, etched in stone here. But another direction that's very important that commercialization is not about on the internet is sort of like what Slashdot has been doing and what the Independent Media Center sites around the world have been doing, the indymedia.org, indymedia.org, which allow community reporters to report on news and information and events as they develop, including breaking news or more thoughtful pieces, and then the sites are organized by a local community based on what it thinks is important. That's an important trend that would provide antidotes to what you were talking about, like when the press decides to focus on whatever it is, Monica Lewinsky for 6 months or a year, instead of more important issues. And Chris, you asked for an example of the best, what might be an example of the ways that community figured out what issues are most important to it and pushed them ahead this way. And I hope that we'll have the opportunity to see more of that through the indie media sites and through other sites, websites and other kinds.
Do you have an example yourself, John?
Well, yeah, for example, I mean, there hasn't been very long for this kind of thing to emerge, but people's interest from all parts of the political spectrum in these major issues around free trade, like the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and International Monetary Fund, and the demonstrations against them, and demonstrations coming up against the FTAA, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, that'll be ministerials held in April in Canada, in Quebec. And this kind of thing is an example of what when people put their priorities together, what they want to learn detailed information about that they may not get from the mainstream press. I think there are much more simple examples, too, such as simply healthcare. Way back in 1990, when Clinton had a Democratic Congress, Clinton didn't even push getting health care for all people, although he created a successful illusion that that's what he was doing. And the problem partly was that the mainstream press would not mention even the word universal health care.
John, I take your point. I want to hear from Steve and John Katz about this as to, you know, how we're changing the conversation by letting more people in and letting them sort of rate each other's comments. John Katz?
Well, I think one thing is happening is that the agenda becomes organic. I mean, it's changing all the time, and it's really self-correcting. It really takes a lot of heat off of journalists when you think about it, rather than have them hold up in Washington or New York saying, you know, as they do all the time, saying, well, gee, this is what we think is important. You can sort of see what's important to people. I think in the broadest sense, what you're seeing is a decentralization of information. You know, the hundreds of thousands of web pages given away free on search engines, the proliferation of mom-pop stores on the web, and the stuff that Steven is doing and Slashdot is doing is really, I mean, I would caution, there's a very strong and traditional editorial sensibility behind these sites, both Slashdot and Plastic. It isn't quite anarchic. You know, nobody's saying here, okay, we're just throwing the whole thing open to the world. There's a really strong guiding sensibility, as there is in all successful media. But I think the willingness to open the agenda up to common discussion and to not assume that we know everything is very significant. It really addresses a huge problem that mainstream media has had, which is disconnection and elitism, and a huge problem that web journalism has had, which is chaos.
Steve Johnson, could you describe the sensibility of plastic.com, and do you know what John Katz means? And is it a narrow thing? I mean, is it a narrowing thing or an attracting thing?
Well, what we've tried to do is take the underlying tools that Slashdot developed and apply them to a slightly broader audience. I mean, Slashdot is largely targeted at serious kind of software, open source programmer people who have really intense relationships with their computers, which is great and which I share. We're trying to go a little bit more in the direction of people who have just in general a very intense relationship to the web, people for whom the web has become their kind of primary medium. We tend to think of it as people who are kind of post-college and pre-kids who still have a really intense kind of relationship to popular culture and a lot of opinions about it, but are not really happy with, you know, the news filters that are available to them online. They're not really excited about going and looking at, you know, Reuters stories or headlines. They know that the web is filled with all this kind of crazy stuff.
Who do they count on for the sort of the first draft of hard information?
From
the Congo or from the Congress on the Ashcroft nomination or the stock market?
Well, that's what we're finding out. I mean, plastic is only a week old, and you know, we've been linking a lot to New York Times stories, so we still have a connection to traditional news, but we also link to, you know, really bizarre personal homepages that are kind of circling around as well. So I think we're trying to figure that out right now.
See, if I could jump in on that, I think
John
one
Katz.
Of the great things about plastic is it is the first, I think, not, perhaps not the first, but I think the first significant site to see the connection between technology and culture and to pair them up. And that is something that's a huge hole, I think, in media. You know, while journalists are running around, they go to Salon, then they go to Slate, then they go to Inside.com to keep an eye on what each other's doing. Plastic has done just the opposite. So let's go the other way, and let's just see what people out there are thinking about with an eye, I think, from reading it, towards technology on the one hand and culture on the other. And I think there's an enormous connection between the two now. It's been very, very tough for journalism to see or cover. And I think that's a, you know, I think the much of the site focuses in that direction in the way that Slashdot has said, okay, we think technology is a big story for us and our community.
Can I just say there's also a technology and politics question here, John Katz. I was just struck, this is a tangent, but in the last presidential campaign, there were three commentaries that I found everybody knew, everybody was moved by or impressed by or quoted and passed on by email. One was a kind of a comic takeoff on the television debates between Gore and Bush. The second was the sort of Zimbabwean view of the American election result. And the third was a dialogue as if between lawyers, sort of parsing out the Supreme Court's decision. I don't know who wrote any one of them, but everybody I know on the line had seen them, had commented them, had found a certain wisdom in them, and they were nothing like anything you could have read in the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, or the New York Times.
Well, see, I think what you're saying is very important because I think several things have happened. One is I think that this is a vast community of people who are really now leaving a lot of mainstream media behind as a sole source of information. Secondly, as the dot-com era sort of ends and we find we don't really need four pet stores online, you know, we can do with one, I think there's a window here where people are beginning to think about the net again, not so much in terms of NASDAQ stock prices, but in ways to use this technology for social, political, media, community reasons again. And I think my own feeling is we're about to enter this very exciting new period where people are beginning to look at this culture once again as they did 10 years ago in ways that just don't strictly have to do with making money in the Valley.
Well, let's see. 1-800-423-8255 joins the self-organized web connection. Daniel is on the line.
Yes. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Daniel.
I want to thank you guys. Someone who does his best to go to Slashdot when he can. These are good things. I don't consider them new. They have their roots way back to the mailing lists and Usenet news groups and kill files that are close to as old as the net itself. And this, they raise the question of how much intermediation is the right amount.
Hmm.
Without some degree of organization and choosing the topics and editors and paid columnists and paid editors, you have a gigabytes of randomized stuff. And at the other end, we have, as you say, the formal media where the reporters are paid and the stories are selected, and you see what, in theory, is there to keep the ads from all sitting next to each other. And that cosmic challenge. And it is.
But Daniel, you also have, I mean, the new gimmick here is a sort of rating system that selects in a popular process.
Right. And the question is, how long will it take for that to be corrupted the same way that occasionally eBay ratings have been, you know, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, how immune is this system to being spoofed by people who want to abuse it?
Steve Johnson.
It's a really interesting question. I mean, you know, as John alluded to, I think with plastic, there really is an important editorial function that is centralized and less self-organizing, and that's Joey Enough and Tom Dow, who are sitting there actually creating the tone of that front page. And I mean, Joey and his kind of description of what plastic is described it as somewhere between an anarchy and a hierarchy. And so the betweenness is certainly important. Although there are some sites that are radical kind of anarchies, and those are pretty interesting as well. But for what we're trying to do, the writing and the sensibility on that front door, the way that stories are introduced, is important to us, and we want to preserve that.
Can you fake out the system? Can you fool the guys?
it's a fascinating question. I mean, I would say on the whole that eBay works pretty well. And eBay, in a way, is kind of a big precedent for these sites. You can see the rating mechanism as kind of a pricing mechanism for information. It's a way of what's interesting about the points that you're given at Slashdot to rate other people's posts. You have a finite number of them, and you're only given the privilege every now and then. Every now and again, you're chosen to be a moderator and to be allowed to filter or rate other people's posts. And so they built it into the system. They basically built scarcity into the system so that if you had an infinite number of points that you could spend at will, those rating points would be meaningless because you could sit there and just rate up, you know, all the people that you liked, and your friends would do the same for you. But because you're given a finite amount, it makes it harder to kind of cheat the system.
I think Daniel's question is very good. I mean, I think what has really tended to corrupt media in my recent time has really been when it gets corporatized. I think that, you know, which has happened again and again and again. You know, in any system, of course, can be corrupted, and any system can be manipulated. I think what you're seeing here, though, that is very exciting and very significant for media, is when people, you know, what Stephen does on Plastic is he gives his readers a role to play. He gives them a function in the running of the site. He gives them a say in the agenda. And that binds them to a community as well as simply gives them something to read. And when they're bound to a community, when you create a community, it's precisely what's been missing in so much of journalism. And it when you have people form a community, they feel proprietary. They feel a loyalty. They feel a sense of responsibility to it. And that's quite a radical thing.
Steve Johnson, you're still building it. I mean, do you know where this community is coming from? Who these people are?
It started with one of the things that we did a little bit differently from the way that Slashdot, which really grew very organically, and it's a beautiful story in that sense. We started with the company that I'm part of that owns Plastic, also owns the website that Stephanie Simon and I started called Feed, which is at feedmag.com, which is what I really do most of the time is run Feed, and another site called suck.com, which is we're both kind of old webzines from the early days of the web. So we have the two audiences. We've basically taken the communities for both Feed and Suck and pointed them to the communities at Plastic. So every story that runs at Feed has a little discussion thread that opens up on Plastic. And that's about 800,000 users between those two sites.
So Steve Johnson, hold the thought. We'll be back after a very short break. We're talking with John Katz of Slashdot and Stephen Johnson of Plastic.com about the new web.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're talking about self-organized websites, which can be seen as a kind of, should we say, consumer democracy, cultural democracy, editorial democracy, online. 1-800-423-8255 joins the conversation. Ego boo is a word we haven't mentioned, but it is the kind of the writer's version of runner's high. It's a sort of internet endorphins or something that seems for many people to be the prize and the goal of all this writing in. Stephen Johnson, what is it that brings people to this conversation, and some of them almost as a full-time thing?
Well, it's the term, and John has written more about this than I have, and it's really chronicled this culture better than anyone. It's a term that comes from the open source software movement, where it was trying to talk about why people spend so much time contributing to these software projects without necessarily being financially compensated for it. I mean, you see something like Linux, which is a big collaboration between people all over the world that aren't necessarily working for a company or actually doing work for pay, but they somehow want to contribute code to this collective project. And the idea is that there's this kind of ego boo thing, which is it's intrinsically rewarding to kind of have your work brought into the project or accepted into the project. You rise in the estimation of your peers in that community. And so there is some of that that goes on certainly at a self-organizing content site or community site. Mm-hmm. And Slashdot and Plastic both have something which is not entirely as fully developed maybe as it could be, called Karma, which is basically a rating that you get as a user, not unlike the kind of trust ratings on eBay or opinions, which is kind of the sum total of the amount of stories that you've suggested to the front door that have been accepted and the ratings of your posts as rated by other users. So as you participate and as your things are highly rated, you get increasing karma points, basically.
Until your karma eats your dogma or runs over your dogma, or your dogma eats your karma. 1-800-423-8255 makes the self-organized website connection. Casey is on the line.
Hi, Christopher.
Hello,
hi,
Casey.
John. Hi, Stephen.
Hey there.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
What's your point here, Casey? And what's your experience with the new web?
Well, I started with Opinions about 17 months ago.
Opinions.
Yeah, opinions.com. I was writing a bunch of freebie travel stuff for Frommers, and they put a little ad on there for Opinions. At first, I started out just writing travel stuff, and I got that eagaboo rush. Then, also they were paying 30 cents a hit if the members would read everything you wrote. And I'd never been paid for my writings before. Starting back in high school with Sister Mary Frances, I think being in charge of the journalism newsletter gave me my first feeling that somebody might actually want to read what I had written. I experimented and started writing about things I knew best, which was music from the 60s and 70s. Kind of a reconstructed hippie. There was a lot of positive comments, so I started writing about other topics. I like the fact you can write about anything. They don't tell you what to write about.
How do you write a hit? How do you write 30 cents worth? And does it build up?
Well, I've made about $4,000 in 17 months.
Oh.
And I'm writing just very part-time. But I've also had a chance to insert a lot of editorials. As a registered nurse, I like to do a lot of community service. So I've written things. As you build up the trust that, you've been talking about, people want to read your stuff just because you've written it rather than it's about a product. Now, opinions.com does push product reviews, but they let you write editorials. So I've enjoyed writing editorials about AIDS, suicide, dealing with an aging parent with Alzheimer's, child abuse, a wide variety of topics. And it's funny because once you build up that base, it seems like people keep coming back. So the people that are reading what you write are making the decisions in the sense of, is this something valid? Is this something important? Is this something, that is worth our time? And I think that spurns me to write more.
Casey, this is fantastic. I mean, you're a modern woman, an opinionated nurse who's articulate and who's entrepreneurial at the same time. I think Sister Mary Frances would be incredibly proud of you.
I would like to take Sister Mary Frances and show her suck and see what.
I mean, it's a great story, and it reminds me of something John said before, which I totally agree with, which is what I hear in all of these stories, and what we're trying to do is a little bit of that initial feeling that John and I went through in 94 and 95 when the web first came along, which was not about making $4 billion with your IPO, but was about these interesting, very individual, small scale, very grassroots kind of projects. And I hope what we end up with is, 100,000 people making $4,000 out of their writing rather than, 10 people making $10 billion.
I think I would still be doing it if I wasn't making anything.
Casey is a great example of a person who was shut out of media for many years. And I think the whole point of the open source and the open media model and what Plastic is doing and Svashna is that she's invited to the table. And she let her, she tried to do that with the Washington Post. It wouldn't happen. And her opinions are important, and she has things to say, and now she has a medium to say them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. I think that's just good for media, and it's good for her, and it's really the best of what the net can be about.
Casey, thank you. And I'm going to check your entries. 1-800-423-8255, the self-organized website. Dick is on the line.
Hi, you've been talking about communities, which I think is the way, as you say, the next wave. What's interesting is the application of this technology to the academic and scholarly community, which you haven't really discussed. Those are existing communities that have traditionally used a very slow and hierarchical method for communicating their ideas. And the interesting thing about that is most of those writers donate their content to the system and then buy it back. And it seems to me
how does that work?
Is a very useful way to imagine the evolution of scholarly communication as well.
How do you mean donate it and buy it back, Dick?
Well, authors, if you're in the field of medicine, you write an article on brain research, you submit it to a publisher, and then your institution has to buy that publication back to get in their library so it can be read. So it's a donated content and buy it back. That's the way the scholarly communication system currently works. And it seems to me that it takes a long time, sometimes 2 years, for an article actually to get back into the intellectual community through the traditional publishing way. This both speeds it up and gives the users of those articles a chance to comment on and evaluate the value of it, not just a small elite editorial board.
And Dick, doesn't this also help remote and sort of more disconnected researchers get information they couldn't get before?
Absolutely, absolutely. It makes it far more open. Of course, it challenges the traditional role and what happens to copyright, what happens to intellectual property when it opens up that way. But those are issues that need to be addressed.
Dick, thank you. Could I just say, it seems to me we've come almost full circle with an argument that began years ago in the connection with Sven Burkitt's about a book he wrote called Gutenberg Elegies. It was kind of sort of bye-bye civilization. We're coming into a new electronic world where pornography, dreck, boredom will drive out everything that's been good in the culture. It was kind of a warning, but it seems to me enormously wrong-headed in this hindsight. We have basically here the technological potential for a kind of universal book group that's better than any review system we've ever had. And it allows for, as you said, John Katz, for smart people to be smart, curious people to be curious, people at every level to sort of participate in an open electronic forum. Is that too rose-colored glasses?
No, I think it's very exciting. You know, I think the tragedy of technology, perhaps the way I would see it, is that it always has a double-edged sword. It always brings good things and bad. I think you want to steer a course somewhere between utopia and alarm, and we lurch back and forth. I think the very, very exciting part of what we're talking about is that idea. You know, that I was slow to grasp that the open source idea, the open media idea, really came out of the academic world. It's a very, very peer review driven system.
Exactly.
And I would caution, one caution I would give to people, and I'm sure Stephen has experienced this, you know, there can be a lot of ego boosting in certain ways of writing on the web, but people should also be prepared for, you know, mostly a lot of, you know, half of what I hear are people telling me what a jerk I am. And you have to be also ready to take.
We'll take care of them, John.
Right. We have to be prepared to take a lot of criticism.
1-800-423-8255. Steve is on the line.
Hello.
Welcome, Steve. Yes, you are. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've been around the internet for a while. I actually originally saw the web for the first time back in '93 when I was with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And Christopher, you might know a couple of folks up there in Toronto. But at any rate, my point is that I've surfed Slashdot enough that I know that. A lot of the content there is, without wanting to offend folks here, but it's rather juvenile. Now, when I really want to get some informed opinion, I turn to Harper's Magazine, Atlantic Monthly, Scientific American, and so forth, the old-fashioned conservative folks that are out there that are doing a first-rate job of, getting across some of the best journalism in the world. So my point is, and by the way, I'm sorry, but I can't remember the name of the publisher of Harper's right now, but he wrote an essay recently saying that he does not intend to put the content of that magazine online for free, and for pretty good reasons. The economic model of the internet is still, I think, open to question. And believe me, I speak from experience. Our company provides services in that field, and we just saw a good chunk of our clients go south. So I guess my question to your guests is, where is the place for the Atlantic Monthly's Scientific Americans of this world in the web going forward?
John Katz.
Well, I think it depends on your own cultural perspective. I think those institutions do tend to be very hierarchical and top-down. It's very good stuff in them, certainly. And I think a lot of people feel, as you do, that we're seeing this sort of period of chaos. You know, everybody has to bring their own individual values. There's definitely a lot of juvenile ranting and raving on Slashdot. I also think that the juveniles are really building this new culture and are very exciting and smart and creative, as well as being obnoxious and hostile and strange. I think the fact is that the people who have been setting that agenda are going to have to share, like it or not. And if media does not want to be online, does not want to be on the net, I just think the risk they take is being marginalized. And, of course, it's their choice, but I think that's what's going to happen to them.
You know,
I like the fact that my ideas can go all over the world. I think it's great for me as a journalist.
Steve it's Johnson. Still possible for the Atlantics and the Harpers to coexist not only peacefully but actually to have a positive relationship with the Slashdots and the Plastics. I mean, Feed continues to be pretty much a magazine format site that we publish with paid writers and paid editors. We like it when, you know, we first started looking at Slashdot because Slashdot would link to our stories and they would drive a tremendous amount of traffic over to our site. So they're pointing to the stuff that we're creating in the kind of traditional top-down way, and we benefit because we get a lot of traffic from it. So I'm sure as Plastic grows that Harper's and the Atlantic will be encouraging us to point to their stories too.
I wonder, Steve Johnson and John Katz, do you still read the New York Times or the Journal? Do you watch any television? And can these very robust dinosaurs survive in this new world?
I've seen certainly, I mean, I continue to read the Times and the Journal. I've seen a direct kind of zero-sum exchange between my web use and my television watching.
John Katz?
I decided to survive as a media critic. I needed to not read the New York Times, and so by and large, I don't.
Not even online?
Very rarely.
How about the Journal? How about Harper's?
No.
How about Time Magazine or the networks?
Once, you know, people send me stuff, and if it's that they do something interesting, which happens about once a month, somebody forwards it to me.
Isn't it amazing how the good stuff gets around?
It does. It comes to you. It finds you.
Yeah. Steve Johnson, it's a pleasure to meet you. John Katz, it's a pleasure to renew a great friendship. Thank you. John Katz is a columnist for Slashdot, the author of Geeks. Steve Johnson is the co-editor-in-chief of Feed, who wrote Interface Culture and the forthcoming Emergence. Connection listeners, you can continue the self-organized web conversation on our own website at theconnection.org. Thanks for help today from Glenn Alexander, John Hoder, Tim Monroe, Darren Manoogian, and Kim Bichari. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.
Support for National Public Radio.